Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, August 27th. This is the 33rd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding restaurant editor at a top culinary magazine, and I'm thrilled to have her here. Now, before I introduce her, as I do on every show, I will start with my PR tip. And then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip off the show with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to pitch wisely. Be creative, be concise, and be persistent. But perhaps most importantly, be realistic when you approach the media. Be honest with your clients about expectations and pitch only what makes sense. And there's a fine line between being assertive and being annoying. Try not to cross it. The pitcher's job can be tough, but so can that of the pitchees, who get more pitches than you can imagine. So pitch with a purpose, a good purpose, that is. And that's my tip today. I am so excited to have my guest here. It is Kate Crater, the restaurant editor at Food & Wine magazine. Her job entails finding new chef talent and spotting trends in the food and restaurant world. So without further ado, welcome, Kate.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Kate. I'm so happy to have you here.
I am so excited to be here.
Oh, great. Well, yeah, 45 minutes of Kate in my day. Awesome. So I did not read a huge bio on you. So I wanted to start with your background and how did you get into the food and restaurant world and do writing and editing?
You know, I've been in this industry for such a long time. I actually feel like I got into it almost the minute I got out of college. I was driving home from my liberal arts school in Ohio, a place called Kenyon, with my dad, and he was a lawyer, and I thought I would end up just going to law school, but he did ask the question, what are you going to do? And I said, I guess I'm going to go to law school. And he was not a happy lawyer, and he said, I think you like to write and you like to eat. Although actually I think it was more like I like to eat and I like to write. And he said, you should maybe go work at a cooking magazine. And back in those days, that was in the late 80s, food magazines were so much different. They were very, like, things were shot in soft focus and it was more like a chicken goes around the world. But I still just loved the idea of it. And so I went to work at Family Circle magazine in London.
Oh, okay.
Through a kind of fluke, and I've just never looked back. And I've been working in food magazines almost consistently since then.
And so then how did you transfer from that writing into food writing? Because I know you went to cooking school.
I did go to cooking school. I went to a fantastic, like a legendary school in France called La Varenne, and it was run by a woman called Anne Willen. And some of the really great food editors in this world have come from La Varenne, including Tina Ulaki, who is at Food & Wine.
Right.
Really, there's a fantastic, this show is just not even long enough to talk about everyone who went there, but you really got this fantastic education, and it was run by Anne, but the head chef was this guy named Chef Chambret, and he was that kind of old school French chef who would stick his hand into a pot of boiling stock to get out the veal bones, and he really gave you a rigorous training into, you sort of got the background of French cooking and just cooking in general, and then Anne did a lot of cookbooks, so you sort of learned editorial as well. And so that gave me just a really, really good education. And when I left there, I went to Food & Wine, and that's it.
And that's it. When was that? When did you join Food and Wine?
I got to Food and Wine in 1992, 100 years ago. And I left for a little while. I was on that .com thing for a little while. So I was gone. But then I realized Food and Wine's like my family. So I came back.
It is like a family. And I think it's a great family to be part of. Even though we're looking at it from the outside, I mean, everyone I've met there, you all are so nice and genuine, and you produce an amazing magazine.
Oh, yay, Sherry. I think we do. But yeah, it's fun.
No,
I'm not
just saying that. I mean, it's a magazine you want to read every single page. Like, you can't miss a page.
Yay. Well, it has so many different voices in it, but it's, you know, Dana Cowan has been the editor-in-chief of it for almost as long as I've been there, and she's done such a good job, and I feel like it's evolved really well as the food scene's changed exponentially, mm-hmm. exponentially in that time. And so I think Food and Wine has really done a great job of looking at people and places and restaurants and all the ins and outs of it. You know, we've watched chefs rise up and become rock stars, and now we're watching, you know, farmers and artisans also get in the spotlight. So I don't think I can't even think that there could be such a good time to be in food and be obsessed with it and want to know about it and read about it and be involved in it.
Yeah, I agree. And that was when you were talking, I was going to ask you what's changed, and you pinpointed some of those things. And so what's changed about your role, like when you started to what you're doing now?
When I started at Food and Wine, I was a food editor, and I'm a very good food editor. I have my secret skill in this world is I'm a very good recipe editor. And that gets you almost nowhere in this world right now. But
I don't think so. That's a good skill.
It's a good skill. It's like being good at jigsaw puzzles or something like that. You know, it's the kind of thing you can whip out sometimes and impress people. And it's good. It actually is good for readers that the recipes are, you know, well edited and everything. But Food and Wine's moved so much beyond that now. When I started in the 90s, it was such a recipe-focused magazine, and indeed we still do great recipes, and they're tested so well, and they all work, and we swear by all of them. But now we cover so many other things in the magazine, and so when I started out, I was a recipe editor, and now I'm the restaurant editor. So I still will edit food stories, and I get to edit recipes, do my good job. But now I write a lot more than I used to, and I definitely do a lot more talent scouting and finding of trends and a lot of other things that we're focused on at Food and Wine.
Right. Well, it looks, I mean, from reading the magazine, it does seem, well, what are your regular, do you have regular columns? I mean, it seems like you do features, trendsetters, is that trend spotting? That's the name, right?
Trend spotting, yeah. I work on a column that we introduced a little while ago called Trend Spotting, where we round up really cool trends that we see around the country and around the world. I do Best New Chefs every year, which is one of the things, it's one of Food and Wine's great platforms, and we find 10 outstanding chefs around the country every year who we get to highlight. I do a lot of Where to Go Next in restaurant columns, and I do something called Most Requested, which is on the back page where we find our favorite chefs and get them to tell us some of their favorite recipes or their recipes that people demand the most, and we get to highlight them.
So who have been some of those chefs recently?
On Most Requested?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Nancy Silverton is coming up. April Bloomfield has given us great recipes. Just about, I have to say, almost anyone you can think of, I think, has been a star on the back page. Tom Colicchio is coming up. For one, Stephanie Izzard did a fantastic, fantastic skirt steak in a recent issue, and she put tomatillos in her salsa. It was sort of a fruit salsa, and she put tomatillos in it, which gave the salsa this fantastic crisp crunch and a little bit of tartness. And I couldn't believe, knowing I had never tasted it before, but that was a great recipe.
Yeah, I love her. I've had her food mostly probably at your events, because mm-hmm. I haven't been to Girl and Goat in Chicago, but I've always rooted for her in a sense because she went to University of Michigan, which is where I went. So it's like we have that Go Blue connection.
Yay! Go Blue. She's great. She's a really terrific cook. You know, it's great that she won Top Chef, and that's a really good thing to do. But, you know, that doesn't always guarantee success, and it doesn't always guarantee a great restaurant. And I think that I'm so proud of Stephanie and how much good work she's doing in Chicago. And then, you know, it's so funny that we get to highlight her. And then I think the month before that, we had Jacques Pepin. So we really cover a wide range of chefs on that back page.
Yeah, I think the content in the magazine, it is, as I said, you have to read every page, but it's always fun to flip to the back and see the chef and the recipe and who you're highlighting. So getting back to picking the top 10 chefs of the year, so how does that work? I mean, how do you... I find I follow New York City really well, but mm-hmm. I don't follow the whole country and know as much. And that's your job.
Yeah.
I mean, so how do you seek them out?
Well, I'm from New York, and so I always think New York is the best. And in fact, in our September issue, we did a really cool poll where we asked, it's a very non-scientific poll, but we asked readers what they thought about different cities, and they said that New York City has the best chefs, which I definitely agree with. And I do feel like we have the deepest bench, as good as the food scene is getting around the country, and it's getting so good in so many places. New York's the best, so I agree with you. It's, you know, we always find the best new chef in New York, but we have these, we go to a group of people who can be everyone from food writers to former best new chefs to people that we trust, and we ask them for their recommendations. So we do a lot of scouting ourselves. You know, it's really great to read city magazines and see if they're, you know, super psyched on someone. Sometimes you can like follow trails on Instagram and see everybody. It happens that everybody's Instagramming a dish somewhere or a restaurant or a chef, and then you sort of start paying attention to them. But most of all, we count on our trusted correspondents around the country who eat out all the time, too. And they'll say, there's a guy in Cleveland who we love. There's somebody blowing up in Boca. There's someone who you should really be paying attention to in Oakland. And then we check them out. We make sure they qualify, which means that they need to have been in charge of a restaurant kitchen for no more than 5 years total. And then we travel and we go and taste the food ourselves and make sure we think that they are really best new chef caliber, which means that they're cooking food that's delicious and creative. And it can be creative in a lot of different ways, but you really feel like they're doing something and they're making a mark, and we think they have like great futures, and we truly believe in them.
You're incredible at picking these. So your process, it works.
Yay, thank you.
Yeah, it does. So, question, when you travel and go to these restaurants, do they know you're coming, or is this anonymous?
No, it's true. We make it as anonymous as possible, as possibly can. And we found out,
disguises?
Actually, no, we haven't gone that far. We haven't. Ruth Reichel, well, you know, she's so good at it.
Go ahead. Yeah, I loved her book and descriptions of that.
It's amazing. Amazing what she used to do. We don't quite go that far, but we actually found out, somehow we found out that some chefs who had won, and if we asked them for nominations, would nominate their friends and then tip them off and then say, okay, we called, so I nominated you for best new chef, and what's going to happen is Food & Wine's going to call you and ask, say they're updating their records, and ask for all your details and do this. And then they said, in the next couple months, check your phones, check your reservations for 917, for like 212 and 917 phones. Seriously, this happened. And it was crazy. It was really hilarious to think about. So we had to start using like friends' phone numbers, or going through OpenTable. You know, OpenTable is really helpful with that kind of thing. But you had to go through elaborate ways not to, if you had a 917 phone uh-huh. number, and not to call from the office when you were making a reservation, and to use maiden names, and it's gone.
Wow.
It's become very elaborate.
Yeah, no, that's really cool to know. And mm-hmm. Is that a team of people from Food & Wine that kind of goes out and takes
yeah.
turns at restaurants? Because as much as I know you love to travel and eat, you can't go everywhere yourself, right?
Yeah, I can't go everywhere myself. And so there's basically three editors who travel around the country checking out restaurants. And because we really have to go to a lot of places. It used to be that you felt, or you basically found best new chefs in major cities. And I do remember there have been some big surprises, or not big surprises because it's inevitable, but I remember Michael Simon was the best new chef in Cleveland in the late 90s. And that seemed like a good surprise then. And now we find a lot of great chefs there. But traditionally, you knew you would find a best new chef in San Francisco. There would probably be a best new chef in New Orleans. And then sometimes in L.A., I mean, now L.A. is a powerhouse. Now mm-hmm. L.A., I think, is one of the top three restaurant cities in the country. But, more than like 12 or 15 years ago, not so. So it was really beyond New York, Chicago, and San Francisco where you felt pretty confident that in that kind of city with that kind of audience, people would be eating food that we felt was really creative. Beyond that, you didn't really have to travel, or I don't want to say that. You didn't have to cover as much ground as you do now. Now if somebody says, there's a fantastic, this guy is cooking great food in Jacksonville, or this guy is cooking great food in Omaha, Nebraska, instead of being skeptical, you're like, awesome, let's go check them out. So,
yeah, well, the food world's changed, and it is. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how New York City chefs are leaving and opening in their hometown, like Gavin Kaysen. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I could see that. And I was thinking, wow, has Michael Simon come a long way since he was the best new chef, right?
Yeah, no, Michael Simon has done a lot. Michael Simon, I think, so many people know him as a TV chef now, and of course he's great on TV. But really, like when he was cooking, he really helped change. He and Tom Colicchio are two that I can think of now who made some changes in when everyone was cooking a certain kind of food. I think they came out and helped break the mold and helped establish American food in a certain way. There was definitely California mm-hmm. cuisine before that, but those guys put an exclamation point, I think, on a certain kind of cooking here.
Yeah, and I always think of him as the guy with the best laugh. He really does, right?
It's the truth.
Okay, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back, so stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Kate Crater of Food & Wine Magazine.
So, hi.
Okay, so let me jump into my questions that I had from my last week guest, which was Rita Jamay.
Love Rita Jamay.
Yes.
I love her.
And I didn't say this last week, but what a name, Rita Jamay.
I know, very fabulous. she should be in like movies, like she could have been a star from movies in the 50s, I mean, she's way too young for that, but she really could have been like some glamorous, fantastic Rita Jamay.
So, the fabulous Rita Jamay of La Caravelle Champagne asked you two questions. So, the first is, how do you go about selecting the restaurants that you visit? And in picking your restaurant itinerary, does it matter if the restaurant is new or already in existence? So, I think this goes a little beyond the, we were talking about the best new chefs, but just generally for the magazine restaurants that you're visiting.
These are those are both good questions, Rita Jamay. I think I'll start with the second one, which I like to check out. It's part of my job to go to new restaurants, and so I do go to new restaurants a lot. But they definitely don't have to be new. I really do like to feel like you know, you like to discover the place, which is something, it's become, you know, almost a race now. And certainly, you know, when thing, you know, when Eater started, I think they helped fuel that kind of fire of like being there first, being before the plywood's off the door, you know, all that kind of thing. And I have to say, I'm definitely part of that. Like, I love if I get to feel like I'm in a place early and you sort of get to like put your, be part of it. But it definitely doesn't have to be a new place. And I have a lot of beloved places. When I used to live in Brooklyn, and I felt like I couldn't go to Battersby enough, even as I was supposed to be going to a lot of other places. I was addicted to Battersby, and I get addicted to restaurants. So you just have to fight that addiction sometimes and keep moving on. But
yeah, well, side note, because I've been to Battersby, and I loved it, but I haven't been to Dover. And they were one of your best new chefs. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
See, I do read the magazine.
Thank you. They won. They were best new chefs. I mean, they were sort of best new chefs for both restaurants. I think technically we gave it to them for Dover because it's a newer restaurant and they're doing great food there. But I have a big place in my heart for Battersby, for that tiny, tiny sliver of a restaurant. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the kitchen is smaller than most people's Manhattan apartments, smaller, which is small.
Smaller than the studio.
Smaller than, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. No doubt. And they were doing this miraculous thing. You know, they did that kale salad. They helped put kale salad on the map, and their soups were even better than that kale salad, which is a terrific kale salad. There's some restaurants that you love. And the first part of the question...
How do you go about selecting the restaurants? And I'll add to that, are publicists influential in your decision?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good question, and I thought that your tip was really... really smart, and it sounds kind of obvious, but I don't think I could emphasize it enough to know who you're pitching to. You know, if you're pitching to Food and Wine, we're a magazine, and we like to be trend forward. We like to, you know, we do things for home cooks, and so sometimes someone will call up and say that they have a new like beverage director, or they've added some banquet hall space to their restaurant or their hotel, and that's something that we could never cover. You know, it doesn't really resonate in our world. Whereas on the other hand, if you can say, you know what, our new cocktail, we have a new cocktail program, and we've been adding all these drinking vinegars, or our chef started his own garden. If you figure out a way to make it sound special, and it just helps to pick up whoever you're pitching, like whatever the magazine is, whatever the publication. If you look at the website for 5 seconds, if you know what you're talking about, use an example from a past issue, it makes a world of difference. I can't say it enough.
Yes, and thank you for saying you like my tip. I was hoping you did.
I did. It was a great, it's a great tip, really. I can't tell you, as you say, I think every editor gets a lot of pitches, and you want to meet with people, and you never ever mm-hmm. know, and you don't always know people's stories until you get to meet with them. But it definitely helps to know that someone's thinking about you and knows what you're doing, and they can make your job easier, yeah. You know?
And it's funny because now that I'm doing this show, I'm starting to get pitches I smile every time one mm-hmm. comes in, and sometimes they're great, and sometimes I could tell they never listen to the show, and it just doesn't make sense. And mm-hmm. I knew that from talking to the media and knowing mm-hmm. what you're interested in, but then actually experiencing it mm-hmm. has made me smile. Mm-hmm. Say, aha, this is what they're talking about.
Yeah. I pick restaurants based on a ton of things. One thing I love is when you feel like you've gotten sort of inside tip on a restaurant, you know, when a long time ago, Andrew Carmelini, who is the chef at La Conda Verde, now he has a big empire going, and he was the chef at Cafe Balut for a long time. He was where I think Frank Bruni called him like one of the best chefs in New York City or in the country. So he's an epic chef. I'm the biggest fan of his. And he told me about two of his guys who had left La Conda, left Avoce, and were going to open a place called Teresi Italian Specialties. And I think it had just opened, and it had just opened as a deli. So I went there for lunch with Andrew Carmelini, and I was instantly obsessed with it. And, you know, they've gone on to do these amazing big things now. You know,
amazing.
They have Carbone. They're about to open Dirty French. So I feel like on that kind of thing, sometimes you get to have like a little bit of inside info, and it really helps you to feel like, you know, when you get to hear something like that, it's always fun to have that kind of info. On the other hand, you know, you're not always, you don't know, it's not every time that a great chef takes you to a restaurant that turns out to be like a huge success. But you know, I love to see where Pete Wells is going. I love Pete Wells. I think that when PR people pitch you in a good way and they can say, you know what, we're doing this kind of thing, you know, this guy is doing this kind of thing, and I think you should pay attention to it. And especially if it's a PR person that you trust and you say, you know what, I think that you've steered me right before and I believe in you, then I'll give that place a shot.
Well, that's great. I have a feeling Rita will be satisfied with your answer. You answered it very thoroughly.
Phew.
Yeah, no, that was great.
I would not want to disappoint Rita.
No, either would I. So what else I wanted to know with trends or things you're seeing happening in the industry, or what's hot now?
You know, it's such a great time right now because it seems like almost anything goes. Really, there's so many great trends. Sometimes there's like one big thing driving the day, like Italian. You know, a couple of years ago, everything was Italian. Everybody got their pasta extruder. Everybody was doing some kind of pasta. You know, and right now the Italian thing is still going strong. You know, as Andrew Carmelini's like Bar Primi's great. I still like worship Carbone. But French has obviously come back, and I'm speaking mostly about New York right now, but mm-hmm. French is big. I feel like people are rediscovering French. You know, the Teresa guys are opening Dirty French. There's Cherche Midi from McNally.
That burger.
I know. The burger is amazing, but, you know, I feel like there's so many other things besides that burger. Like, the mussels are fantastic. The cheese course is amazing. The crudité is beautiful.
I went there for my solo dining experience that I do in this show, and mm-hmm. all I had was the burger, but all the food around me looked fantastic, so I would love to go back.
It's really, really mm-hmm. good. There's an adorable place called Claudette on the corner of 9th Avenue, of 5th Avenue and 9th Street, that's lovely, really, really good.
I had an excellent meal there. I loved it.
Yeah, Corin's there, and Wade, mm-hmm. this guy Wade Moses is, I think, the executive chef. And then in L.A., there's Petit Trois from Ludo Lefebvre that's just opening now. It's a tiny, tiny place, and they're doing like all these like old school French dishes. They do this outstanding omelette stuff with Boursin cheese. It's fantastic. We have a story with him featuring some of that food in the October issue of Food and Wine, so I'm excited about that. In San Francisco, I think I could speak French. Monsieur Benjamin
I can't either.
From Corey Lee is opening. There's Republique back in L.A. So there's the French trend. I feel like people had sort of forgotten how great and how fun and how delicious brasserie food can be.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming back to it. And we're also, especially here in New York, I think on the cusp of this fantastic taco revolution. I think that in general, the country, you know, there have been great tacos, especially on the West Coast and also in the November, like I got to go to San Diego and eat some really amazing tacos, which is for an upcoming issue. But here in New York, Alex Dupac is opening up a new mm-hmm. place that's going to be focused on literally like one kind of taco. And then this world-class chef, Enrique Alvera, is opening a place called Cosmo in a couple weeks. And he's doing single origin tortillas, which is fantastic. So I think that people... I saw some kind of like a crazy chart, and it said that New York is one of the worst taco cities in the country right now, or it was 50 of 50. We were at the bottom of the list, but I think that's all about to change in the next. First of all, I disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, I think we're about to like shoot up the charts in a very dramatic way.
Well, if you're saying it, I believe it. And I think, yeah, people have complained about New York's Mexican food just not being stellar
mm-hmm.
for just as, you know, I mean, we have everything here, and I think our food is at such a high standard in so many levels. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that.
Yeah, no, Alex Dupac, I think like what Alex did, you know, Alex pays such great attention to everything he does. And mm-hmm. so I think that when he decided that he would leave being a pastry chef, and he was like one of the country's great pastry chefs, to focus on Mexican food, you know, it was the kind of thing that you could be skeptical about. But I think it's awesome that I think it's awesome what he's done, and he's helped pull attention to it. And now, you know, Danny Bowen's making tacos. And I think, like, I love what Danny Bowen does. And I love the energy and his, like, singular point of view on things. And then I think also when Enrique comes to town, that's going to be amazing, amazing for us.
Yeah, well, I'm getting very hungry listening to you. Okay, we're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back. I'm going to do my speed round game and talk some industry news, so stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Okay, we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Kate Crater, and it's time for my speed round game.
I'm nervous.
You should not be nervous. This is a fun, easy game. What it is is I'm going to ask you two things, such as chocolate or vanilla, and you pick your preference.
Okay.
So here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out. That's hilarious.
Duh. Wine, beer, or cocktail?
All. Can I say all of them?
There's no right or wrong in my game, and everyone wins, so.
Yay. I say all of them, but if I had to rank them, I would say cocktail, wine, beer.
Great. First ranking. Love it. Okay. Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
That's a really good question. I'm torn on that. Are you allowed to give an explanation as you buy time?
Kate, you're allowed to do whatever you want.
This is my kind of game.
Yeah.
I think small plates are brilliant, and I have a short attention span, so in general I love small plates, but I've seen so many of them that I really like the new, I like the idea of large plates and platters, and so I'm going to say platters.
Okay.
Platter food.
Great. How about tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Writing or editing?
Ooh, that's another good question. You know, editing's like a little like, I mean, editing's great. Writing's a little bit like running. You know, writing can be so hard. But when you stop, it's like, I feel like I run for that moment when I stop running, when I'm done and I can see what I've done. And I feel like writing is like that. Like writing can be excruciating, at least for me. But then you finish and it's done and you have a huge, much huger sense of accomplishment than editing. So I would say 75% editing, 75% writing, 25% editing.
Awesome. Love the analogy. Okay, a few more. Sriracha or any other particular hot sauce?
Wow, I'm very big camp hot sauce, so I would say sriracha plus others. I love Tabasco. I love there's a hot sauce from Canada that I can't remember the name of now that is my favorite thing in the world. So I can't exclude anything.
Okay, I know you're a hot sauce girl. So, so am I.
Truth.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Wow, cheese plate.
Last one, Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
Cool. I thought you mentioned earlier that, are you living in Brooklyn now?
No, you know what? I moved. I think that's a big part of it. I moved. I left Brooklyn almost a year ago. So
I thought you still lived in Brooklyn. So
I mean, I believe in Brooklyn, yeah. And Brooklyn Brooklyn has done so much for the country and everything and everybody. But I'm definitely focused on Manhattan now. I mean, no, it's not just that. I think Brooklyn doesn't even need my help anymore. You know, Brooklyn is doing just fine with with every booster that they have and all the fantastic creativity that they have. And so I miss Brooklyn, but I'm in Manhattan right now.
Oh, terrific. Well, thank you. That was the game.
That was a good game.
Thank you. So let's play. Let's talk some industry news. Okay, so first thing, I just wanted to bring up how James Oslin, the editor-in-chief of Sever Magazine, it was announced in the New York Times that he is leaving to start a new magazine at Rodale. And then Eater, I read a piece there that he's going to, it's called Organic Life, and they're transforming Organic Gardening Magazine, which is a 62-year-old magazine, and it will cover food, garden, home, and well-being. So I thought that was, you know, he's been with them since 2006.
Yeah, no, James is a visionary editor. He does a really, really good job. I think, you know, Sever has always been a great magazine and covered a niche that is great, great to cover. But I feel like James took it without changing it dramatically. I think James did a really good job of like putting it up on a pedestal and giving it a spotlight. And I think it will be really exciting to see what he's going to do at Organic Living.
Yeah, me too. And I'm actually, then I later saw that my friend Erica Ducey, whose husband is Jono Pandolfi, who came on the show. Mm-hmm. He's a ceramics designer. He does all 11 Madison Park and those restaurants. So Erica's going to Sever in their digital department. So I think there's changes going on there. And I think that's why James also left, because there were changes about to happen.
I didn't know. I don't know the side stories of that, but I do think that James is very talented and brings a fantastic perspective to what he does. So
I agree. Looking forward to seeing what he does at this new magazine. Okay, next story. Mm-hmm. I think you will be very familiar with this one.
I think I know what you're going to talk about.
Okay, so the Chef's Club.
Yay!
Is opening in New York in the Puck Building. And this is Food & Wine's magazine's restaurant of a curated selection of visiting chefs. And it started in Aspen. So I'm not going to talk more about this. You tell us about this.
It's exciting. You know, I don't think anybody at Food & Wine planned on getting into the restaurant business. But, you know, especially through our Best New Chefs, we get an opportunity to taste so much great food from so many great cooks around the country. And we thought it would be fun to sort of curate them, to give people a sense of having like multiple, you know, it's like a band now. And so, when you know, it's great to have like one great chef in the kitchen, of course, like we'll forever love that. But it's also fun when you see four hyper talented chefs and get to see what they do. You know, it's like going to the best potluck in the whole world, or having the opportunity to choose all these great dishes. And so we've done it very successfully in Aspen, and we're launching it in New York in October in the Puck Building. And it's going to be fantastic. Our first four chefs are all Best New Chefs. One of them is Lachlan McKinnon Patterson, who's at Frasca Food & Wine in Boulder. Another is Eric Anderson, who was at the Catbird Seat in Nashville, and he's opening up a place called Brute in Minneapolis. And then there's also
Gabriel Rucker.
Exactly. Thank you, Gabriel Rucker from Le Pigeon in Portland, Oregon. Everybody loves him. And then Linton Hopkins from Atlanta. So we got these great chefs from all around the country who represent different things, and they're going to have dishes on the menu, I think, at all times. And then they're going to come and make periodically throughout the year, they're going to come and like make guest appearances and be there for dinners and stuff. So it's going to be really cool.
I can't wait to go. And then Didier Elena.
Didier Elena.
That's no French for me either. Yeah, he's
overseeing the whole project. Yeah, so it's good because those chefs are all, you know, those chefs have their own restaurants to run and to work on as well. And so Didier is going to be there and oversee the day-to-day operations and cook. There's going to be another menu besides these fantastic chefs' food. There's going to be a menu of Didier's food as well. So he has this really, he has, I think, what sounds like a really hard job, but a really cool job too, of cooking his food and then also getting to work with these chefs and making sure their food is great as well.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. And having gone to Aspen Food & Wine Classic, I'd been to the original, and I love the concept. And I'm due to go back to the classic too, because I love it. It's the best.
It is
certainly the best.
Everyone should go. I wish for everyone to come because it's really fun. It's like being at the best big small party, and you know you'll see like Mario Batali walking down the street, and you know, and just bump him.
Yeah,
like you can do everything. It's a really really good time, but. One thing that we've learned from seeing all the best new chefs, you know, they all cook in the tasting tent. And you get a chance to taste all their food. And I think that might have helped, like, give everyone the idea, like, everyone should be able to taste these best new chefs' food instead of having to travel to, like, one city and another.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. Awesome. Looking forward. Congrats. Yeah,
thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so we're a little short of time, so I'll just give a shout out to Batard, the team, the Myriad Restaurant Group. Tracy Neporn, who was on the show recently, this is his new place, and they got 3 stars today in the New York Times, and super excited
glowing.
For them.
It's a fantastic glowing review, and all those guys, Marcus and John Winderman and Drew Neprant, they're all fantastically talented people. It's a great review and well-deserved.
Yeah, I agree, and it looks like they're having a lot of fun with it, too. So congratulations. Okay, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience, so stay with us. This is All in the Industry and Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it's time for my solo dining experience of the week. Now, recently I found myself in the Times Square area, and I was looking for a bite to eat. So I decided to check out this brand new, huge restaurant. It's called Urbo. It's on the corner of 42nd Street and 8th Avenue, right across from Port Authority. Now, this space, when I say huge, okay, it's 26,000 square feet. 3 levels, 600 seats, and I read that the design cost $29 million.
Wow.
I Googled that again because I wanted to make sure that was the number, but that's what came up. This is restaurateur Eugene Kudomsky. He has 70 places in Russia, so this is his first New York restaurant. The chef is Brian Young, who worked at Quilted Giraffe, the Bernadette, and Tavern on the Green. Okay, so I went in, and granted it was a Monday night, but there were literally only 5 of us in the restaurant, and I felt terrible because this place is so big, and, you know, they were so nice to me, and I really want them to do well, but I really don't know how they're going to fill all those seats. You know, I went to sit at the bar, and then there were a few bars. There were different chef's counters, so I sat at one of them. I went with the Urbo farm salad with salmon, and the salmon was really fresh. The salad was good. For $21, I was expecting a little bigger, a little fresher. I mean, I hate to put it down, but I wasn't wowed. But again, the staff was so gracious, and the manager at the end, I told him I worked in the industry, and he gave me a tour. I went upstairs. The space is really impressive. It's gorgeous, and I wish them well. I think it's going to be hard to fill that many seats, but if people should check it out because it's cool and it's in Times Square, and I think we're all always looking for places in Times Square to go. So their website is urbonyc.com. Okay, so it's time for the final question. Now, Kate, next week I'm having on Ben Leventhal. We all know Ben from being a co-founder at Eater. He is also now the co-founder and CEO of Resy, which is a new mobile app for restaurants, for people who are, you know, tired of the hassle of getting reservations, is what they say. So,
woo! Ben Leventhal, what are your questions? I guess one of them, you should help me, Sherry. What's a good question for Ben?
What's a good question for Ben?
I mean, there's a million questions for Ben, basically.
I I don't know. I mean, what are you... I mean, this is silly. I'm so curious about his obsession with The Bachelor, but do you know... if you follow him on Twitter?
No, is he obsessed with The Bachelor?
He live tweets The Bachelor.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Ben, what's up with your obsession with The Bachelor? That's one question. And I want to know... Well, I kind of want to know what's his favorite. He has his restaurant, his restaurants that he picks, you know, his favorite restaurants are fantastic. I want to know what his top five restaurants in New York City are right now.
Awesome. I think your question's a little better than mine, but I'm curious about my question, too.
Me, too.
Okay, great. Well, that went quickly. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Oh, my gosh, Sherry, how great to talk to you.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been a true pleasure, and I learned so much. So,
oh.
Yeah, you're amazing. The magazine's amazing. People need to read Food and Wine if you're not already. And for you, if anyone missed it, I'm talking with Kate Crater. She is the restaurant editor at Food and Wine magazine. Their website is foodandwine.com. Kate's social media is K Crater, and you need to follow her on Instagram because she takes awesome, awesome photos.
Oh, thank you.
You do. Now, for me, I'm at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My website's BayerPublicRelations.com. If you miss this live broadcast, you can always find us archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're on Stitcher and iTunes. Thanks to everyone listening. Thanks to my engineer, Jack, and thanks to Kate.
Thanks.
So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Oh, quick note, I'm going to be away next week. So the next live show will be on September 10th with Ben Leventhal. So I hope you'll tune in then. It will be at 4 o'clock as usual.
Happy Labor Day.
Yeah, have a wonderful Labor Day weekend, everyone. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.